got a NES for Christmas when I was, I think, 4. And my first game was, as with most people, Super Mario Brothers. And I have a very vivid, and I don't know if fond is the right word, but a very vivid memory of getting extremely frustrated and my father filming me with the experience. And inevitably, I got so frustrated at my dad laughing at me that I eventually hit the camera his face. But at the time, of course, it was, you know, very stressful. But years later, it turned out to be a very treasured video that I still share with my kids.
And that's Adam White, Senior Product Manager, Automation at Salesforce. And I'm Julian Duque, your host for the Salesforce Developer Podcast. I'm here at the podcast with your stories and insights from developers for developers. Today, we are going to talk with Adam about the ScreenFlow latest features. But before, we will start just as we left off, and we often do, with his early years.
Well, I can tell you that my first experience with a computer, if you count it, was probably the Nintendo back in 1990. So I'm going to go ahead and count the Nintendo.
Of course, that's a very specific computer, but sure.
Absolutely, yeah. So I got a NES for Christmas when I was, I think, 4. And my first game was, as with most people, Super Mario Brothers. Mm-hmm. And I have a very vivid, and I don't know if fond is the right word, but a very vivid memory of getting extremely frustrated and my father filming me with the experience. And inevitably, I got so frustrated at my dad laughing at me that I eventually hit the camera his face. But at the time, of course, it was, you know, very stressful. But years later, it turned out to be a very treasured video that I still share with my kids.
That's how you end in YouTube.
Exactly. Yeah. That's an unlisted YouTube video right there.
Oh, of course. Of course. So a lot of us started with video games. I remember my first console was the Atari 2600. Mm-hmm. Way different than the Nintendo. Then the Nintendo came in and was a way different world. What happened after that?
Well, you know, I feel like gaming was my segue into just getting into tinkering and technology in general. So, you know, I think my pathway was something like NES to Super Nintendo to Nintendo 64. And also at the same time, I think my parents had gotten, gosh, maybe like a Pentium 100 back in the day with either a 288 or a 56K modem. And, you know, it was always playing the hot potato game of getting online and then having to get off because someone had to make a phone call. But at the same time, you know, I think my computer at the time came with, gosh, if I'm trying to remember back, I think it was Freddy the Fish was one of the games it came with, and Army Men and Civilization 2.
Oh, yes, I remember that one.
Great games, and those exposed me to like a whole different world of gaming, right? Because those are something you have to do. You have to install them. You have to troubleshoot them. You have to wonder why things are running slowly. And the
drivers, getting the sound man. Drivers, video and drivers.
If you think back in the day, right, like things were way harder. You had to like boot into DOS with a floppy disk to install Windows. And I think gaming was really my segue into getting kind of tech savvy, right? Because eventually you get that itch, you need to upgrade your computer. And, you know, back then it was actually cheaper to buy the parts and upgrade. And I think maybe in middle school, or maybe it was freshman year of high school, I built my first computer. And, you know, when you do that, you have to do a lot of research, wondering why it's not booting up. You're ready for the tech world at that point.
Definitely. Did you study like any tech-related career, or what's your background?
Yeah, it's interesting. Like my whole family probably would have expected me to go into engineering, but I just didn't like math a whole lot. And the schools I were looking at had pretty hard engineering programs, and most of them were heavy in math. Super interested in technology, but I felt like I could get into the tech field without doing all of that. And so I kind of went the business route. So undergrad, I was an econ and Spanish major, but, you know, I took a couple e-school classes around programming and things like that. But it wasn't really until after college that I started to get more into programming and systems.
And what was your premier programming experience? Do you remember your first language or environment?
I do, yeah. So I think it was, I think it was called Scheme. It was
Scheme.
Like,
oh, yes.
Is it Schema or Scheme?
Scheme, the Lisp-based one.
Yeah, exactly. I think that was my first exposure. I mean, Excel formulas were kind of like my first programming mm-hmm. experience, but I think Scheme was my first real language that I picked up in college, and then started to dabble in Java a bit. A couple years, maybe like my second job, just to kind of put it under my belt, and then, you know, later with Salesforce, Apex was, you know, obviously very similar to Java, so I picked up on a lot of that, all the historical stuff around learning object-based programming and things like that really gave me a good leg up.
Yeah. Now, speaking about Apex, how you started with Salesforce? Because you mentioned transitioning from Java to Apex. Did you have the opportunity to work for a company with Salesforce or at Salesforce?
Yeah. So Salesforce wasn't even a blip on my radar, as with probably most people when they get out of college. I had no idea what I wanted to do. So, of course, you know, when you don't know what you want to do, you go into consulting out of school. So I was like in management consulting at Accenture. You know, a couple of years in, I enjoyed being around systems. Accenture is a very system heavy company. So, you know, I think I had heard the word Salesforce muttered around the office, but it wasn't really, you know, something I was super interested in because I didn't know what it was. And then I left Accenture after a couple of years to join a small tech company in Tyson's Corner called Alarm.com. So I think, you know, maybe when I joined, there's about 120 people as a program manager. So I was quite good at program management. And actually, they were in the midst of evaluating program management and kind of change management tools internally. So mm-hmm. I implemented Jira, Confluence, Bitbucket, a bunch of those Atlassian tools. And that kind of got me into the whole like business application space. And, you know, after about a year, we launched it, and I was kind of looking for other opportunities outside of program management. And so I jumped into our operations group because our Salesforce instance really didn't have any dedicated administrator. And so I went ahead and took the job and was up for the challenge. I think it had been, you know, quite a number of years without a dedicated admin. So there was a lot of, you know, tech debt. There was no process in place. So I put on my program manager hat and implemented, you know, like a change management board with Jira, and got my admin certification, and just really got super into Salesforce and realized it was something that I wanted to do full time. So I left that and started down here in Richmond with a group called CapTech Consulting as a full-time Salesforce consultant mm-hmm. after having been a solo administrator for about a year. And at that point, that's all she wrote. I just got really into Salesforce and then quickly discovered the magnificence of Flow, which back in the day was, you know, very different from what it is now with the Flash UI and no holds bars setup and configurations. Like, it was a different time then.
Yeah. How was that first experience with what we call low code? Because you were used to like Java, object-oriented programming, some Apex, but then you get the experience of like not using code directly, but like a visual tool to build an application. How was that first experience for you?
Yeah, so I actually didn't really do a whole lot of coding day-to-day in most of my roles. So, you know, when I was first starting out with Salesforce, it was all about, you know, workflow rules and process builder and use Apex when you need to. And so I wasn't, you know, maybe that's probably why I was so into Salesforce, was because it was so easy. And when I was an administrator for Jira and Confluence, it was kind of tricky. You had to install add-ons to do a lot of the same automation that you can do in Salesforce very easily. And so I think, you know, those are the things that I had wished I'd had with Jira, with all these awesome, easy automations that you can set up. And so I think, at least for my first automation was probably just like a basic email alert. But I do remember my first flow. And that was I think it was a flow that was kicked off by Process Builder, because I was trying like hell to do something in Process Builder that just simply wasn't possible. And I was trying everything in my power to not have to create a flow. And this was, you know, gosh, 6 years ago at this point, where I had to like create a record and then reference the record ID that I had just created and write it to like an account record or something like that. And it was couldn't have been more than a two-step flow. But just at that moment, you're like, oh, this is not that bad and is also very cool. So it was just very powerful to be able to quickly spin up an automation for very little effort. And that, I think that for me was just, that's all she wrote.
Yeah. I consider myself pretty new to the Salesforce ecosystem. I joined the company 4 years ago. I never used Salesforce before. And as a developer advocate, I have to create content and share with the developer community. Mm-hmm. So I tried to create content around Flow.
Yeah.
But I didn't know anything about Flow. So of course, first thing I did, Trailhead. Mm-hmm. I started like consuming Trailhead, doing the super badges. And initially I was super hesitant to the whole Flow concept or low code concept, because I consider myself a hardcore developer, show me the code, this is what I like. But once I started to learn, to grasp the concepts, building a ScreenFlow, connecting things together, processes together, it was like a turning point for me. I knew this was powerful and now understood why people like it that much.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, of course, it's a UI and it's never going to be as, if I have big blocks of code that I can just copy and paste at will in other places, like it's very tricky to replicate that experience in something like a tool with Flow. But you also get many other things, right? And so from my perspective, of course, there are going to be pros and cons, specifically around the experience of building it. But at the same time, you also have to factor in all the things that you gain, right?
Yes. So right now, you work in the Flow team. What's your job, your current job with the Flow team?
Yeah, so I am a product manager specifically around screen flows. And one of my major objectives right now, at least the past year and likely into the future, is what we call our reactive screens effort. I also own many of our out-of-the-box components that you can drag into the canvas. But by and large, my main effort right now is just frontier expansion in screen flows, which is making flows, screen flows specifically, more powerful and extensible. So this is especially important for developers, because historically, before reactive screens, to get a component to react to another component, you'd have to build just a big monolithic LWC or a component on the screen that might be comprised of 5 or 6 different components, but you couldn't really see what was going on. You couldn't reuse it. It was very restrictive, right? And what Reactive Screens allows you to do is build modular, extensible components. So you can give a component a job to do and reuse it in any flow, which is quite important when you're creating scalable applications, right?
Yeah. This is a little bit for our audience that it's new to Flow. What is a reactive component? How can I envision a reactive component to understand a little bit more?
Yeah, and it's interesting you say that, because a lot of times people just kind of assume that that's how the web works, right? So for you developers out there, this is all about putting more data and interactions into the client, into the browser. Historically, screen flows have been extremely server focused. So you got to put in some text, hit the next button, it hits our servers, it comes back. There's pros and cons with that, right? You get a lot of good data security out of that. However, at the expense of the user experience. So an example might be, you know, the very basic use case is as I'm typing in, you know, an input field, I have some text on the right hand side telling me how many characters are left in my input. Or if I've got an input field that's invalid, it might have some warning as I'm typing that, hey, your input's not valid, you know, before they have to actually hit next and experience that at the very end of the form and have them, the user get frustrated. So it's all about improving user experience, more real time and in the client than in the server.
And what about formulas? Does it support formulas as well?
It does, yeah. So there are some formulas that are not supported. Our formulas team, so outside of Flow, actually built an entire library that essentially takes all the Salesforce formulas that we all know and love and converts them into JavaScript, and we can run those in the client. So there are a vast majority, there are many functions and formulas that are supported in the client. And so if you do, you know, something like 1+1, you'll get a 2 on the right-hand side of a Flow screen. And so there are definitely many formulas, and formulas are a key part in driving reactivity, especially when you're trying to, you know, do math, perform logic, basically just drive the whole experience.
So, and also it is possible to have reactivity between, let's say, a standard Flow component and a custom one built with Lightning Web Components?
Absolutely. Yeah. As long as you are following best practices in your LWCs and you're importing the Flow control module and you're firing change events in the right way, it will work.
Nice. That's great. I've seen some of your demos that you post on LinkedIn. And for sure, we are going to be sharing your LinkedIn on the show notes so people also see all the greatest things that your team are working on. Is this new feature, correct me if I'm wrong, the repetitive components? Is that is that something that it's already available or it's...
Yes, it's coming soon. That was a little preview. It's called the repeater component. So repeaters are something that actually are fairly high effort as a developer, right? It's not a great model that you can reuse for any object. So you almost have to like recreate a new repeater every time you need a different object, new set of fields. And so I'm really excited about repeaters because it's going to be built natively in Flow. And you won't have to create custom LWCs anytime you need to repeat a set of inputs, right? So imagine I think the classic use case we like to use internally is you're setting up a set of beneficiaries for like an insurance policy. And you don't know how many, you as the Flow builder don't know how many beneficiaries that user might want to add to that policy. And so typically you have to, you know, use conditional visibility with a finite number of, in this case, beneficiaries, which very limiting from a scalability standpoint, right? And so this will allow you to basically just drag in it very much looks like a section component. You can put in supported fields. And after the screen, we essentially create a new data type called a repeater data type that you can loop over and do really whatever you want with it. We created it with flexibility in mind because we don't want to assume, you know, you might have one object inside a repeater. You might have two or three different objects that you're just trying to abstract to the user.
Wow, that's powerful, because even though using custom Lightning Web Components, that's not an easy task.
It's not. And I'm really excited. It's going to be a huge time saver. And really, it's just a total mind shift in how you can create UI very easily in Salesforce now. Like, I think what I can't wait for is eventually this release, we're just supporting a subset of components. And when we GA, we'll be supporting all of our standard components in LWCs, which is going to be fantastic. And then after that, we'll be supporting what we call the edit scenario, where you start with data when you enter the screen. Mm-hmm. And once we get to that point, like, it's going to really change the game on how people want to create records and relationships in Salesforce. It's going to just be such a fantastic addition for end users, I think.
So we have reactive components, which are GA, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, we went GA in winter 23.
Okay.
Winter 24, just this past release.
Oh, nice. The repeater component, which is coming.
Yep, it'll be beta in this upcoming release. And we're shooting for GA 2 releases from now.
Beautiful. And what other features do you have?
Ooh, yeah. So one of the biggest challenges with reactivity today is you can react on things that are already in the client, already on the screen. Mm-hmm. So you have to know ahead of time what the user is going to do. But what if you need to go and get data while the user's on the screen? So classic example is, you know, a user selects a contact record, and maybe you want to display the contact's cases right below that lookup. So even though we have reactivity, that's just a framework thing. That's just a platform functionality. But you still need a mechanism to grab that data. And so what we're working on is something called screen actions, which will come in two different parts. The first part is through what we're calling action buttons. With an action button, you'll be able to essentially run an auto-launched flow to go and get data or perform some calculation for you that can then spit back into your screen without having to hit next. And so, you know, the world is your oyster. If you can put it in an auto-launch flow, you'll be able to do it all on a single screen. So if you wanted to grab, you know, let's say in that example where you put in a contact into a lookup, what if you wanted to grab their other accounts, their other cases, or perform some sort of aggregation? You can use our new transform element, spit it all right back into the same screen, so that as soon as you select that contact, you can have a button that says get contact info, spits out everything that you could ever want to know about that contact all on the same screen without hitting next.
Or also an external callout could be another.
Absolutely.
Example.
So the very first callout or action button demo that I did once this had hit production a couple weeks ago in our preview orgs was I created a button to hit the dad joke API. There's a free there's a free API that you can use that can generate dad jokes. So I just threw in the HTTP callout, or the standard one with Flow, generated some dad jokes and threw it in some display text.
Of course, that's the best way to demo that.
It is.
So the first one is a button, and the second one?
Oh, yeah. So then the second one is something that's going to come a little further out. We actually don't have a name for it yet. We have a lot of debates internally. Would love to hear what people think we should call it. But essentially, now this is where we really get into some crazy stuff. Imagine you could run one of those auto-launch flows off any criteria on the screen. So without having to hit a button, imagine you could go and get all that data from that other step as soon as there's a change in the screen. Mm-hmm. So you could kind of think of it as like a reactive action almost, where if someone's typing, you could run a flow and do calculations. So a lot of people have asked for things like, hey, as I'm selecting rows in a data table, what if I wanted to add up, you know, an opportunity amount and show it on the right-hand side, or grab the earliest or latest opportunity and show it to the user? You know, there are just a million different use cases, which I think this is going to be just totally change. It'll totally change the game on how screen flows are built.
So if you compare to a custom landing web component, this could be like an event action.
You could
much.
Think of it as like a controller almost. Yeah. Like an event and controller model. And what's kind of neat is now this could allow for developers to not have to build, you know, controllers that are nearly as complicated. They can just use the data from the flow and they can focus on the front end.
This is going to enable a lot of developers, know that I'm thinking, because you don't need to go to build custom invocable actions or custom components to perform this level of UX, but doing it just with standard components on a screen flow. So this is definitely going to enable a lot of people, know that I'm seeing it.
Yeah, most definitely. And then there's other features that we're working on that I would consider kind of more table stakes that are kind of expected with form building. And one thing that we're working on right now is conditionally disabled and read-only fields. So it's been a very common ask for folks to be able to, you know, disable a text input or make it read-only, because, you know, when you want to display information about a record, you kind of have to use display text, right? But what if you want it to look like a form? That's where the read-only mode can come in for text inputs. So that's another thing we're working on.
It seems your team is busy and next year is going to be busier.
Very busy. And it's funny, you know, before joining the team, you know, I was a big Flownetic for years. And, you know, even then I was impressed with the amount of content that the Flow teams generated. And I always took for granted how complex all these features are to create, because, you know, when you add a feature, you have to support that feature and you have to figure out how that feature works with your new features and your old features. So every net new feature you adds complexity and development time.
Beautiful. That's great. And I'm super happy to see all the new features that are coming to Flow and all the great work that your team is doing.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm really excited too.
Sure. So Adam, while you are not improving the life of our Salesforce developers by adding awesome features to Flow, what do you do? What are your hobbies or what do you like to do normally?
Well, if you couldn't guess already from the beginning, I'm a gamer. I don't discriminate in what I play. I've got PC, PS5. I'm actually really, really in love with my Steam Deck.
Oh, nice.
I bought a Steam Deck back in summer, and I just got the new OLED model, which has been just awesome. So I love gaming. I enjoy coffee roasting, actually. I roast my own coffee because I got super into coffee a few years ago. And it's kind of expensive to buy really nice beans. And so I got into coffee roasting initially as a way to save money on fancy coffee beans. But it turned out really started enjoying it. And I really, really love metal. I think you and I have talked a lot about metal music. Yes. I'm actually about to go on a cruise in a little bit.
Heavy metal cruise.
Yep.
It's gonna be real fun. I'm so jealous. And what are you playing right now? What is the game you're playing right now?
Ooh, so I'm on a roguelike break right now. And I say break because sometimes I'll be in a game like Baldur's Gate 3, which I just finished.
Oh,
which took a long time. So sometimes after those long-winded epic journeys, I'll just go on a roguelike spree where I can pick games up and put them down real fast on the deck. So Enter the Gungeon is one I'm playing right now. Let's see. I went kind of wild on the most recent Steam sale, so I'm kind of just toying with a few games right now. But yeah, Baldur's Gate 3 I recently finished.
Wow. I'm planning my second playthrough.
Oh, very nice. Yeah, I'm scared to start a second playthrough. Yeah, I would say top 10 game for me, easy. And, you know, I was talking to my friends, it seems easy on the surface to pick a top 10. But then when you think back, like of, you know, 30 years of gaming, it's actually quite difficult.
Yes, definitely. Adam, this has been an amazing conversation with you. Thank you very much for all you do. And folks are going to start listening this episode in 2024. So happy new year to you all.
Happy new year.
And that's it. If you want to learn more about the show, head on to developer.salesforce.com/podcast, where you can hear all the episodes and read the show notes. Thank you, everybody, and talk to you the next time.